You're listening to audio from North Monroe Baptist Church. To find out more about the church or donate to this ministry, visit northmonroe.com.
Good morning. Happy Mother's Day. Moms, I wanted to say, you really are the greatest. And I think sometimes you have a hard time believing that, but believe me, it's true. This past week, I was reading a Fortune magazine study of the 50 most influential, powerful women in the country. And I've got to tell you, that list was pretty impressive. You had women who were head of General Motors, head of General Dynamics, head of Fidelity Investments, head of Oracle. I don't know if the glass ceiling has been shattered, but it certainly has cracks in it. And these were influential, powerful women that, you know, you have to back up and admire. But I noticed that there were two women that weren't on that list. I didn't see Sarah Dye or Amy Dye. And I've got to tell you that as influential and powerful as the Fortune 500 women are, they had nowhere near the influence over my life, over the lives of my sons, as my mother and the woman that I'm living with, who is the mother of those sons. But then again, that wasn't the criteria, was it? When I back up and I read the criteria, it was things like the career arc or the corporate arc of that particular person, or how big the company was, and all those other things. And the one criteria that you never see in terms of an influential, powerful woman is mom. And yet I've got to tell you that while those women in the Fortune 500 list are, by all outward signs, incredibly powerful, influential women, they don't wield the influence over the coming generation anywhere near like those of a mom. Because the truth of it is, there might be women who influence more people, but there is no one who influences a person more than his or her mom. Moms really are the greatest. And if you back up and you start to think about that, then you have to ask yourself, what exactly am I influencing my children for? And that's a key question we need to answer. You see, if you are that influential, then what are the influences that you are bringing, and what are those things that your kids need most from you? You know, normally on Mother's Day, we talk about, you know, there's nothing like a mom, moms are the greatest, and that's all true. But at the same time, I think it helps us to back up and look at the Word of God and say, okay, moms, you are the greatest. You have the greatest single position over the coming generation of anybody, anywhere. What are you going to do about it, and what do they need most from you? And so as I thought and prayed about that, I thought about talking to you about some of those things this morning. And here's the first thing that I see. They need your joy. I know that sounds strange, you know. It's like they need so many other things, but we sometimes forget that they need our joy. You ask the average mom, how do you feel? And almost always the answer is tired. They're exhausted. And in the exhaustion, something begins to happen in your soul and in your spirit where the life just kind of gets drained out of you. I mean, in the myriad of details of taking care of all the little things all day long, and those things that at the moment might not even seem that significant or consequential. And through all of that, you can gradually feel as if your joy has been eroded or eaten away. And then you add to that the seriousness of life, right? I mean, let's face it, there are serious things going on in life, and sickness and the fears that are involved. We're dealing with that right now with the whole COVID-19 thing and trying to protect our families and trying to make sure everybody gets what they need. And now we've got kids who can't go to school, and so everybody turned into a homeschool mom all of a sudden and developed a whole new appreciation for the importance of teachers, right? And all of those serious things can begin to rip away the joy that's in you. And yet, listen to this. Joy is one of our greatest weapons in dealing with hardships, setbacks, and disappointments in life. Joy is one of their greatest weapons. Nehemiah chapter 8, verse 10. For the joy of the Lord is your strength. Now, I know it's the Lord that's the emphasis there, right? It's the Lord that is our strength. The joy of the Lord. The joy we have in the Lord is our strength. But he didn't say the righteousness of the Lord is our strength. He didn't say the sovereignty of the Lord is our strength. He didn't even say the love of the Lord or the peace of the Lord. He said the joy of the Lord. And I think this is something that people often miss. There is this very important connection between the joy that's in us and how we deal with the troubles that we face throughout our lives. And you see this repeatedly throughout the Bible. James chapter 1, verse 2 says, "Consider it all joy, my brethren, when you encounter various trials." And so there's a joy that we need in order to deal with the trials of our life, and we can actually look at those trials and look at them with joy because of the residual faith that's working in our life, knowing that whatever happens to me, God's bigger than my problem, right? And so I can consider that joy. 1 Peter 1, verse 6 says, "In this you greatly rejoice, even though now for a little while, if necessary, you're being distressed by various trials." So again, joy and trials tied together. 1 Peter chapter 4, verse 13. "But to the degree that you share the sufferings of Christ," now listen, "keep on rejoicing." But Proverbs 31 has to be the quintessential passage for the biblical understanding of a godly woman. And I want you to look carefully at Proverbs 31, verse 25, because listen to what it says. It says, "She clothes herself with strength and dignity. She can laugh at the days to come." You see that? Now, the New American Standard says she smiles at the future. All the other translations I read said she laughs at the future. And you back up and you think about that, and you have to take away from that that there is an indefinable joy that is always resonant and present in the life of this godly woman. And it's that important. It's not something that's sort of secondary. We'll get to it if we can, but right now we've got to meet all the other crises of life. Joy is that important. Swindoll said, "A relaxed, easygoing Christian is far more attractive and effective than the rigid, uptight brother who squeaks when he walks and whines when he talks." Can I ask you, moms, just honestly, now I don't mean to stop preaching and go to meddling, but honestly, when was the last time you laughed? I mean, seriously, what happened? Who stole your joy? And if it's gone, how do you get it back? Let me offer just a couple of quick suggestions, okay, to get your joy back if you've lost it. First, catch a break if you can. Some of it is just the immediacy of life is hitting you and you're tired. So if you can get a break, if you've got some parents, the kids can watch, or if the kids got some other thing that they can do, or if you can hire a sitter and just have a night. But listen, when you catch that break, don't fill it up with 1,000 other things that's going to leave you more tired than you were before. Take the time to relax. You know, the word recreation doesn't mean go and be as busy as you can and beat yourself to death. It's at its core, recreate. Allow the Spirit to recreate those things which have been lost in you so that you can live with that kind of joy. And then the second thing I would say is simplify where you can. Get a break when you can. Simplify when you can. Stop making it harder than it has to be. Stop over-scheduling. Don't over-prepare. You know, one of the things that we had to come to terms with, Amy and I did, as we were raising our four boys, is that we had to realize that this is going to be our life. You know, you back up and you think, well, I'm going to have children and I'm going to add them to the life adventure that we're already having. No, no, no. They become something of the life. And we had to stop and say, look, this is it. And if we don't find joy in these experiences, then we're always going to be frustrated because we can't do what we want to do. And when we did that, we kind of backed up and life just started to roll and things just started to happen. And what you're going to realize is that some of the greatest moments that ever happen in the family happen when they're not scheduled or planned. I love Allison Pickett. She's the wife of our former media guy, Jody Pickett. Jody left here and he's pastoring a church somewhere in Missouri or somewhere. But Allison has the greatest sense of humor. And I love her Facebook post. This is from May the 2nd. She had a picture of her daughter, Olive. And Olive's got this bright red wig on with her hands on her side. And she's got a smiley face shirt on. And here's what Allison said. "In case you're feeling bad about your cooking skills, tonight while the kids are at the table and I'm in the kitchen, I hear Olive telling her siblings, 'When I don't like what we have to eat, I just say to myself in my head, something's better than nothing, and I eat it.'" Allison wrote in the comments, "Maybe it's burnt, maybe it's slimy, but my girl knows it could be worse." A little while later, Allison's husband, Jody, chimed in. He said, "She makes a killer PB&J, never overcooked." And then Allison replied, "It'll be overcooked today, buddy." I love that spirit. I love it that even though this business of parenting is on top of us, it hasn't robbed her of her joy. And that's what your kids need. So lighten up. Give yourself permission to be joyful. Give yourself permission to laugh. Stop worrying so much about what everybody else might think. If you care so much about propriety and what other people might think that it keeps you from joy, well, let me tell you something. It's also keeping you from modeling the Spirit, because joy is one of the fruits of the Spirit. Listen to Galatians chapter 5, verse 22. But the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, there it is, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness. And when a home is filled with joy, you're teaching your kids that through the power of God, you can handle whatever trouble comes, because there is this connection between joy and trouble. And it also puts laughter in the walls. And I've got to tell you, coming from this side of it, the day's going to come when all those little guys are going to leave. And I know what you're thinking, whew, when's it going to be? Let me put it on the calendar. But it doesn't work like that, because by the time they leave, you've kind of gotten attached to them. And when they're gone, you don't really care if they made straight A's or what got broken or what didn't get broken. The only thing you really want to hear is the laughter in the walls. And that's the part that really speaks to your heart. Look, moms, they need your joy. Life is too hard to try to get through it without that. Secondly, they need your comfort. I was reading 2 Timothy and I came across a line. Paul was in prison waiting his execution. He's writing some important things to his young protege in the faith, Timothy, and he mentions Onesiphorus. 2 Timothy chapter 1, verse 16. The Lord grant mercy to the house of Onesiphorus. Now listen, for he often refreshed me and was not ashamed of my chains. And that word refreshed means to refresh through breath. It's to breathe life into. And I immediately thought of, you know, the image of the lifeguard who swims out and drags that swimmer that's drowning out of the water and holds him down and does chest compressions and then breathes into his chest. That's what Paul's saying, man. I'm over my head. I feel like I'm drowning. And Onesiphorus dove in and dragged me out, and he breathed life into me. And I thought, you know, that's the kind of person that I want to be. That's the kind of parent I want to be. That's the kind of mom that your kids need the most. Don't you want to be Onesiphorus? I mean, his name literally means bringing advantage. And wouldn't it be wonderful if you were the kind of person, when you walked into the room, you brought advantage. And everybody was glad to see you, and they were sad to see you walk out. Moms, you do that with your children. And in all honesty, nobody does it better. You've got that healing touch. You know, I got to tell you, when my boys got hurt when they were little, they didn't run to me. They ran to Mom, because they knew that I would poke it or squeeze it or pinch it or probe it or do something. They didn't want all that. They didn't want to be fixed. They just wanted to be comforted. And that's really the business of a mom. It's such a natural part of being a mom that when God wanted his people to understand his comfort, he compared how he relates to them through the image of a mother. Isaiah 66, verse 13, as one whom his mother comforts, so I will comfort you. When Paul wanted to describe the tender affection that he had for the church, he compared it to a mother. 1 Thessalonians chapter 2, verse 7, for we proved to be gentle among you, as a nursing mother tenderly cares for her own children. Do you feel it? And moms, you are so good at that. It's absolutely essential. And your healing reassures them that no matter how badly it hurts, it's going to get better. Now, having said that, the importance of comfort is there. I feel the need to offer a word of caution, okay? They need your comfort. Now listen to this, but they don't need you to fix all their problems. And I think that's another thing, moms. You know, helicopter parenting, where the mother hovers over the child and sort of always tries to fight his or her battles. Or the new expression, lawnmower parenting, where the parent tries to get in front of the child and sort of smooth everything out and cut the grass before they have to walk on it. That's going to create a child ill-equipped for this life. And that's not what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about trying to take away everything that could possibly hurt them and rising to the defense every time somebody doesn't treat them exactly the way you thought that they should. You know, there's this thing in moms too. There's this nurturing thing, but there's also this mama bear thing, you know, where you better not mess with my kid, the claws are coming out. In fact, Hosea wanted to describe the powerful justice of God, and he compared it to a she-bear robbed of her cubs. Hosea 13, verse 8, I will encounter them like a bear robbed of her cubs, and I will tear open their chest. You know, something crazy can happen to these mamas when somebody starts messing with their kids. I mean, if you've ever coached Little League, you know exactly what I'm talking about. Or maybe you're a teacher and you've been there, although I think the teacher's job's going to be easier now after the coronavirus outbreak. Because I don't know there's ever been a time where moms appreciated teachers more. Look, you're going to have bad teachers. Our kids call them crazy. They'll come home, I've got a crazy teacher. They're unreasonable. I can't do anything. And what they're asking us to do is go in there and change their situation. But you know, has it ever occurred to you that maybe that crazy teacher or that crazy coach or that crazy person in their life is there by the design of God to instill something in them, maybe to put a backbone in them or to steal their character or to teach them that, you know, everybody's not good. And so we'd sit down with our kids and we'd go, look, sorry you got a crummy teacher. But here's the thing, there are crummy people in this world, and sooner or later, one of those crummy people is going to be your boss. So I'd rather you learn this right now, how to relate to them, than when you get into that situation. You can't fix every problem. You can't always prepare the road for your child, but you must also prepare your child for the road. So they need your comfort, but, you know, word of caution, they need your sacrifice. And that seems almost unfair to say because everything about being a mom is a sacrifice, right? But I think there's more to that. I think it goes to the spirit of sacrifice. Because if you're not careful, you wind up sacrificing with resentment because you're not able to do what you wanted to do. And maybe this goes back to the joy thing, I don't know. But they need to catch you willingly sacrificing with the kind of spirit that's doing it in the same spirit that Christ who gave himself up for us. Proverbs 31, again, verse 14. She's like merchant ships. He's describing this godly woman. She's like merchant ships, okay? And she brings her food from afar. Now look at verse 15. She rises while it's still night. I mean, this is a hardworking, disciplined, sacrificial woman rising while it's still night. Gives her food to her household and portions to her maiden. So she's constantly sacrificing for the needs of her family. I get that. But then, even more than that, she begins to sacrifice for the needs of others. Proverbs 31, verse 20. She extends her hand to the poor and she stretches out her hands to the needy. And again, that's a great model. And your kids need to see you sacrificing. Not just for them. And not just with a resentful spirit. But again, I got to offer a word of warning here. I mean, teaching sacrifice takes more than modeling it. You also have to expect it from them. And moms, this is something that I'm really concerned about. If the mom's the only one always sacrificing, then the children will not grow up and be sacrificial. They will grow up and become selfish. Because when you meet their need before they feel the need, they do not become grateful, they become demanding. And that demanding spirit is the very opposite of what you're trying to build in them. And I know what moms are thinking. If I sacrifice my children, they're going to see that sacrifice and they're going to want to do it too. But that's not necessarily how it works. You have to expect sacrifice from them. So you teach them to share. You don't always defend them in every situation. You help them learn to share their things. You help them learn to be a giver rather than a taker. You teach them to wait on gratification. You teach them to put other people first. One of the greatest mistakes parents are making is they're sacrificing too much for their kids. And I know that's crazy to say, But when you meet those needs before they're felt, you're going to create a demanding spirit instead of a grateful heart. And listen, I know you think you're helping them, but you know this as well as I do. Nobody likes a selfish person. Nobody wants to be around a selfish person. I mean, how can you make friends when you're selfish? How can you listen to instruction when you're selfish? How can they serve God if they're selfish? So teach them not to be selfish. Let them do without so that they can appreciate what they have. Make them share. Give them tasks where they have to serve someone else. You're training them in unselfishness. And here's why. One of the most important life lessons they will ever learn is that it's not about them. And the last thing is they need you to love Jesus. They need to catch you loving Jesus. It needs to be authentic and real and modeled. It needs to be less of a focus on outward things and more in the heart. 1 Peter 3, don't be concerned about outward beauty or fancy hairstyles, expensive jewelry or beautiful clothes. Isn't that often the case? You should clothe yourselves instead with the beauty that comes from within, the unfading beauty of a gentle and quiet spirit which is precious to God. And that's where it's at. And listen, this love of Jesus is more transferred through your life than conveyed through your lips, okay? And so you got to let them see you trusting Christ. When there's a crisis in your family, bring the kids in and help them pray with you over it. You're not trying to stress them out. And then when God answers that prayer, bring them back and say, hey, look what God did. And look how God has taken care of us. And through doing that, you're teaching them to trust. Let them see you stand alone for Christ. One of the other greatest things you can ever teach your child is the ability to stand alone. That you're teaching them that when everybody else is going a different way, I'm going to stand. So let them see you sacrifice certain things because of your convictions for Christ. And then let them hear you love Christ. Colossians chapter 4, verse 6. Let your speech always be with grace, as though seasoned with salt, so that you will know how you should respond to each person. I mean, when you fail, let them hear it through your prayers. When you're glad, let them hear that. When you speak, bring the counsel of God to bear in the everyday life. Look, there's nothing greater than a mom. No CEO or major corporate executive, no matter how well known, no matter how powerful, no matter how wealthy, can ever replace the profound, enduring influence of a godly mother. And they will never have the influence over the coming generation like moms have in every home across the land. And if that's the case, then give them what they need. They need your joy because life is hard. They need your compassion because they need to heal the hurts. They need your sacrifice because selfishness is ugly. And they need your faith because one day they're going to have to stand alone too. And here's the funny thing. Are you ready? Here it is. Last thing I want you to hear. Here it is. What your children need most from you is also what is best for you. Do you hear that? What your children need from you is what you need most for yourself. This is like a gift that just keeps giving. And the very thing that makes moms great is also the very thing that makes a person godly. And that's the thing God wants to build in you above everything else. Would you pray with me right now? I want to pray for you, moms. Father, I lift up the moms. They're tired. They're sometimes frustrated, often on the verge of absolute despair, wondering, can they make it through another day? And they've lost their joy. And they've forgotten what they're trying to do on the broader picture beyond the immediacy of the moment. And this is particularly true for moms who are single moms or moms with distant or distracted, uninvolved husbands. And so, Father, I pray that you would help them to build these things into their children, which turn out to be the very things they need built into their own life. And we all do. So that, God, we could shape and influence a generation to love Jesus and to shape this world so that Christ is glorified. And that's our prayer this morning in Jesus' name. Amen.